we're here at Nina Sony's birthday doing the intro to the computer club.
Hello.
Hello.
I recently discovered that my phone, in which I thought the speaker was broken, it actually works if you just wiggle it a little, which is infuriating because I've used this phone for years without the speaker. And it turns out that it just works if you just wiggle it a little. What am I supposed to do with that? I don't even use the phone anymore.
Well, to be fair, it's not working again.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. Of course it isn't.
So this is Scott, your host for International Computer Solutions and the San Carlos Computer Club. And we are just recording the intro for the last meeting from June 8th, 2021. This is the San Carlos Computer Club. This is...
The favorite child, Emily.
Complaining about her phone. And who's this?
Viviana.
Viviana.
Quiet on my phone.
On her phone.
That works.
That works. Vivi, do you have anything to add?
Where's the speaker?
I'm just holding it over there because the microphone's down here somewhere.
Where's the microphone?
It's right there. Scream like a maniac. Scream like a maniac! It was her idea. Well, we want to wish our Nina Sony a happy birthday.
Happy birthday to Nina Sony, if she ever listens to this.
Happy birthday!
And we're going to let you guys go. Until next time, until next Tuesday, we're here to say, tech on.
Tech on.
Tech on.
Oh my god, this phone.
Woo!
That's not really true.
No, not at all.
Well, I thought I had just started, but not when I have this hooked up wrong. There we go. How's that?
Why does it look different today?
Who looks different?
The Google Meet. There's a black background and my controls are in different places.
Oh, I thought we would spend a little bit of time talking about it when we were getting started, but it appears that Google Meet has done a big update.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Yeah.
But our kids still use Zoom. Our school division is, some of them are in our province, with Zoom. And when I have my doctor's appointments, they're on Zoom still. I've got the meeting details has a lot more now. Communicate with us. Website, Twitter, iTunes. Wow.
Mine looks the same.
Copy joining info. Where's your three dots, Paul?
No, bottom.
My three
bottom
dots
right.
Are over on the right.
Yeah, bottom right.
Okay, so you guys must be using the older format.
That's me, I'm old.
Yeah, you either it wasn't offered to you and you're still on the previous format, or it was offered to you and you declined it as you came in. It was offered to me and I didn't choose to go to the older format. I just went forward.
I don't remember having a choice, but I'm also in Google Chrome. I know sometimes you guys use different browsers.
Well, I'm in Microsoft Edge, and the way I've got my Windows set up here, you can't see the controls. But you know what? Let me try a present. I'm going to present now. So can you see the buttons that have changed around here at the bottom of my screen?
Yeah,
it's a whole different look.
Yeah, you've got a bunch of other stuff there, but...
But no, it's all the stuff that used to be on the bottom and on the top is now on the bottom. So like the three icons to the right were all up in the corner before.
Yeah.
And then your more is right here. I guess the way I have it formatted, it looked to me like it was in the middle, but it's more off to the right. It's off to a kilter to the right.
Well, when I've got my full screen on, you've got other things happening there and you've changed your screen size. Like if I was to present, I would show you that it's definitely in the middle. The five are in the middle.
Sorry, I got things happening on my screen. Well, this is full screen, and it feels like the dots, the ellipsis is just a hair off center. I don't know why.
Oh, yes. The one that's in the middle is the present.
Right, right. And then the more is right next to it.
Yeah. Dave asked what I saw under meeting details. And under meeting details, which is like a little I have Communicate with others. Website, SCC Club, Twitter. I have a whole big paragraph. Tuesday.
You know what that is? That's the description from the calendar event that I created so many months ago.
Okay. And so, then under joining info, I just have the HTTP and the copy joining info. I also have Google calendar attachments will be shown here.
Yeah, I have nothing but meeting the joining info under meeting details.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, you know what, Dave? Maybe if you go into Google Calendar, do you see the event for today in your Google Calendar?
I never use Google Calendar.
Well, that's probably why those details aren't there then, because I didn't write any of this for the meet. I wrote all this for the calendar event.
I didn't know that I used Google Calendar, but obviously at some point I have turned on Google Calendar.
Well, if you've signed into YouTube or Gmail, or in this case, Meet, then if you have content on your calendar, you're signed into your calendar at the same time. But I suspect Dave, he has to be signed into his calendar at the same time. But his calendar doesn't have these details. Like, he never chose to be a member of this event.
We have a happy birthday card. Look at that.
How awesome. Very cool. Thank you, Mom.
I'll be back in a minute.
Okay.
She just had a birthday too.
Yeah, we're both June babies.
No, yeah, we're both Gemini. It's driven the rest of our family crazy.
So, Sandy, what birthday were you celebrating when you went into labor with the...
I had just celebrated, I think, wait a minute, you're born on the 7th. I think I just celebrated 26.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, I'm old now.
I left to get a glass of orange juice. Santa Rosa has the best orange juice that I've found in town. It's 3/4 or at least 2/3 pulp.
Is that the one from the orphanage?
I don't know, but it's in their milk case.
In a white plastic bottle? Probably the ones, they used to come and sit outside of Castaway Kids thrift store, and they had their actual orange grinder thing at market day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that they showed you. But I've seen a couple of posts on WhatsApp San Carlos saying that he's going to be in town and delivering orange juice and things like that. Tony used to sell really good orange juice, too.
Yeah, I've followed Tony's career because we've been here 20 years, and at that time, he used to come through the park playing La Cucaracha, and the darn park members complained about his music and chased him out of the park. The best thing about Lay for me here in town is I go and get some celery, and some mamacita has stripped all the big pieces off and left me the core, which is what I buy. I buy a couple cores because that's the celery I like. She must be making soup.
Who's making soup?
The one that wants the leaves.
The mamacita that takes the big pieces off.
I am.
It might be an abuelita. She's over 35. She's an abuelita.
Really? Abuela is a grandma.
Yeah, abuelita is a little grandma.
A little grandma. That would be, that would be
abuelita.
Me now.
Yeah.
We were at the grandkids on the weekend, and they put me on the height marker. It's the first time I've ever been put on the door jamb. Yeah, grandma's pretty short.
I am starting this stream.
What time is it?
We've got a few more minutes, but I'm going to go ahead.
Just a sidebar to the carrot comment. When I was farming, I used to farm carrots, 70 acres of them.
Wow.
And for the uninitiated, that's approximately 70 million carrots. We used to precision plant them, so I had kind of a rough idea how many were there. And that was enough carrots to supply all of Safeway for the western provinces in their frozen carrot department. We supplied them for their frozen carrots, not the fresh pack. That went a different way. We fresh carrots.
So the ugly ones were frozen and the beautiful ones were no?
No, not really. Some people would call them ugly. There's two kinds of carrots that went to grow frozen. There's what they call the dicers or slicers, which are the coin-shaped ones, round. They slice the carrot along the edge. The other is the dicer. That's little square cubes that go into frozen veg. Your frozen vegetables were all square carrots. And the dicers were red core chutneys, which across the top can be 3-4 inches across and then down to a point. They look more like an elongated turnip than anything, but they are the best carrots. Like if we had carrots in our garden, they would be red core chutneys because they're sweet and they're pure carrot all the way through. There is no centerpiece, that yellow thing in the center. There is none.
What did the kids call the pickled carrots?
Pickled carrots?
No. They weren't pickled in the house. They were.
No. They were silage carrots. We used to take the discards from the grading station, and we would, when we were making corn silage, we would push them up in there and at speed. Basically, they stayed whole. They were flexible, and they were pickled. They tasted like dill pickles. And the kids, in the wintertime when we were feeding the cattle in the feedlot, my brother lived in that feedlot, and his kids would get on the radio when it's coffee time, and they'd say, "Uncle Bill, bring us some pickled carrots." So I'd have to go pick out a couple really good ones and bring them in, and they would munch on them just like a dill pickle.
That's a fascinating carrot story. Thank you, Bill, for contributing. If you're just joining us, we're deep into carrot topics. This is the San Carlos Computer Club. I'm Scott Stimson, your host from International Computer Solutions. We meet every Tuesday at 10, and I have hit the streaming button. So we're live. Jim is just joining us. Hello, Jim. We're just getting going.
It's time for the coffee cup display. There's Billy's.
The Martian. Jim's got some beaver. I'm still rocking the Star Wars cup.
Oh, get out of the rut, will you?
Ah, look at Winnie the Pooh. That's one of my favorites.
I am Winnie the Pooh. I've always been Winnie the Pooh. Deep down inside, it's my alter ego.
So, Scott, as a sidebar, did you look at that video I sent you of the European starling?
I didn't get to look at the video. I read the heading on it.
You got to fire it up when you get a chance. This starling does an amazing mimic of voices. And partway through, there's a Star Wars reference in there.
Okay.
So if Cheryl is Winnie the Pooh, what about you, Bill?
Marvin the Martian.
No.
I shoot people.
Oh.
Preferably Daffy Duck.
There you go.
I'm just going down my checklist. Another reminder about YouTube. If you haven't subscribed to our YouTube, please do. We're trying to hit 100. And it is both my mother and my birthdays that's gone by.
Hey.
Happy birthday,
day.
Mom. Mom's same is on date. The 3rd, and mine was yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
When he comes up, we usually have a joint party.
Really?
My mother.
I didn't know that was legal in Alaska.
Yeah, it is now. Oh. I wasn't really meaning that kind of joint, but I suppose now that we're as old as we are, we could imbibe.
I was going to say, it's Alaska. There's joint parties everywhere.
I wasn't aware that it was ever illegal.
That's BC.
Neither were the Alaskans.
Back in the 70s, it became legal. And oh my, was everybody was high and happy. But we had some, I don't know if it was a couple that decided that somebody took it to the Supreme Court because it was against the, you know, state or the national law, and they got it weakened. I'm not sure it got completely thrown out as an okay law, but it was certainly weakened to the point that none of us were willing to test it. Young people were, but older people weren't. Well, now you look in most of the old people's eyes, you know, they've been having imbibing a little bit. Certainly better than pain pills.
Absolutely. Much better than pain pills or alcohol. I mean, if you're going to self-medicate.
Alcohol, the other big issue up here.
The real issue. That's the real issue up there.
It really is. Most all our social problems are a result of that.
So it was my mother's birthday this last week on the 6th. And while she's deceased, she would have turned 100.
Oh, wow.
It's her 100th birthday. And she's buried just a few blocks from here. So
another Gemini.
Yeah, we're the ones that keep the world kind of interesting, I think, because they never know which personality is coming through.
That's right.
At least that's my case.
Well, we had a fun party last night. Yuya borrowed the terrace of my parents' house, and we had a party up on the roof in the outside.
What?
Yep.
What? that was fun.
It was great. She invited Heidi and Mike, who play music locally here. And so we had lights and music, cake, and she did a big lasagna party. A bunch of friends came, and Mom and Dad's terrace is three stories up, so everyone had to walk up three stories. But then we had this beautiful view of, Mom, you're going to love the pictures, because I've never seen it look so functional for an activity. When I got there, it was a big surprise. It was just full of people. I mean, I knew I was going there, but I had no idea there would be such a variety of friends and live music playing. And I walk, and it's just not even your terrace. It's well organized, lined with tables to feed people, and a corner for the musicians. And it was a great surprise. She hung up lights up there, and we danced and listened to music and drunk and partied all night. Well,
awesome.
Until 11. Until 11.
You so know, what are my neighbors?
My 51st
what are my neighbors
birthday.
Saying?
What's that?
What will my neighbors be talking about today?
Probably nothing. There's not much going on in your neighborhood. But we got some great action shots of the terrace, thinking it would be great for real estate stuff because it was the most functional it had looked. We'd never used it in this form before.
It's because your parents can't get up there anymore.
Yeah, there's some truth to that. Yeah. Most of our guests, we don't want to have to ask walk three stories to get fed. They'd probably do it.
Yeah, but getting them down would really be the challenge.
Whereabouts is that house located? I know we gave Terry a ride home from Computer Club one time, but he was just kind of behind where the old Tony's.
Yes. Well, yeah. We were
it's
kind
actually
of
very,
almost across.
You know where the Telmex office is?
Okay.
It's on that street. So if you were to walk in front of the Telmex office towards the rock, you would pass in front of their house.
Oh, yeah, that's a nice street. I like that.
Well, it's for sale. If you're looking for a house, it's on the market.
Yeah. Sure, we got one.
It's a three-story terrace that some of us can't walk up anymore. Mm. It's perfect.
So you have it listed for sale?
Yeah.
We do.
Yep, it's on the MLS.
I guess I changed cups. I'm now back in San Carlos.
Hey, Bill's cheating in this cup game.
Yeah. Well, my first one was a latte, and now with my Benefiber in it. And now I'm down to the real coffee.
So. Another one of Billy's talents is barista.
I'm going
Scott
through my list.
Classes. He had was a barista for a few minutes.
Yeah, for half a second. I was trained. I never. Well, I'm a self barista, I guess.
But he's got the skills. If he ever needs a job.
Have any of you folks brought your own topics for Computer Club? Anything tech related that you'd like to include in our list today?
I have an update from one of the VB's artwork for one of the Computer Clubs with a little update for you in that regard.
The Frozen Hummingbirds? Is that what you're...
The Frozen Hummingbird one, yes. Billy has been working on hummingbird feeders. He spray painted these new ones that we bought that are in mason jars. They're really kind of cute. Anyways, he spray painted them bright red and the hummingbirds are loving them. They are back. We have one ruby-throated and another one, we assume there are a couple. So the hummingbirds survived the freezing and are
awesome.
Well, we're not sure they survived, but there are two at least around now using feeders. They may be moved in after the freeze, but we are happy to see them.
Well, and it's a sign that it's definitely warmer, right? That's what's important.
Not necessarily. It was, I believe, 6 degrees Celsius this morning when I got up.
Six. It's 10 here, Bill.
Well, we've got cloud. Like, it clouded right over. It's rainy and cloudy all week this week. So there's no real bump. The highest we're going to get this week is 20.
It's bad when they have to use their little beaks as an ice pick.
Would you believe?
So it's only 94 this morning.
Oh, God.
94. Oh.
A relief, right? Oh, that's awful.
With the wind, though, fortunately, it feels like 93.
I bet you noticed that.
All I notice is my electric bill. Well, I'm going to mention again, if you are on YouTube with a YouTube account, please hit our subscribe. I've got some follow-ups. Irving's not here. I kind of want to save it for him. We were talking about hotspots last week, and I found the information about using your Windows 10 computer as a hotspot. It's very straightforward. In the end, I don't think it's the right solution for him, because I think what we came up with last week, him getting a router, really makes the most sense. But I did think this was important information to know, because in a pinch, you might be in a situation where you want to provide Wi-Fi to your devices. And if you can plug a cable into your computer, then this is a way to do it. And it's very straightforward. And I'm going to hopefully, I've been messing around with this new version of Meet all morning. So hopefully I'm doing this right. But I'm pasting it into the chat and I'll leave it on today's meeting. This is Microsoft's instructions for using Windows 10 as a mobile hotspot. And it just looks like this. And it's very straightforward. It's five steps. These instructions do show you where in settings to find the mobile hotspot setting. And what Irving had come across last week was some instructions that were saying before you do it, you should find out if your device supports it. And so he was going into a command line command. I followed him through with it and did it on my end. And it would bring up information about the Wi-Fi adapter. And on there, it has something that says like bridge available, and it says no. And this was the assumption that his hardware wasn't going to work, and he was disappointed because he felt like he had fairly recent hardware. Why wouldn't it work? I found the same thing on mine. Well, it turns out whatever that is, which I didn't do any research into what that was, doesn't affect whether you're able to do this. In Windows, in the GUI interface in setting, you can set up your mobile hotspot, and it doesn't seem to be related to what he was told to check to see if it would work. So this is a way of sharing your computer's resources. Again, like Irving's situation was he had a cable from his neighbor and he had it plugged into the one computer and couldn't figure out how to give internet to the rest of his devices. And this would be a way he could give wireless internet from his computer. There's a similar way of doing it on a Macintosh computer. However, I don't have those instructions in front of me. It's typically called sharing. You're sharing your internet connection. But there's some in settings, some checkbox, slight configuration that affects you can give it a password so no one can jump on it onto it. And it quite literally turns your computer in the background into a Wi-Fi access point. And I'll keep that on the list, but I'll share it with you now just for content. Maybe I'll send it off to Irving since he's not with it.
So, Scott, there must be a way to do that on a Linux machine as well.
There is, and I don't have those instructions either, but I could put it down on the list for a follow-up. I can bring you the Linux.
I'm just curious, basically.
Well, you should be, because you're working in Linux, and some of the cool things you could do is you could stick this in between. You could stick your computer in between activities you're doing and watch. Like, one of the things that's interesting is to follow what your wireless devices might be getting into. And so it's one of those ways, since it has to pass through that computer like a router, then I imagine that there is software under Linux specifically that would allow you to take advantage of that, be able to track where the devices are going and what kind of information they're looking up or sending out. And it would all be done through, you'd be a middleman. That's what you really are on the internet when you do that, is your computer becomes this middleman between the devices and the internet.
I'm just wondering about our kids. Like, they have iPhones, they have Chromebooks, but when all three of them are homeschooling, they've got three Chromebooks going, and they've got their internet, and it's crap They can never, you know, they can't do anything. So I don't know if their solution is boosters or if making hotspots wouldn't help them at all.
It would only help if their internet feed was coming from a different place. Probably the easiest way to think about it is you have internet coming into your house. There's a service that's providing that.
Right.
You plug that into a computer and create a hotspot. You're not going to get any more internet out of that service. You can only get as much as that service is giving. So if the problem is that you're using up that service, the only real solution would be to get another service or to get more on that service. Your ISP.
And I know that they're actually having satellite phone data issues. Like they can't make phone calls from inside the house with their cell phones.
So it sounds like using a cell carrier for internet's not an option either.
Well,
that's basically what we're doing here with hotspots, creating hotspots from our device, from our computer.
Yeah.
That's what you do with your phone when you turn it into a mobile hotspot.
Right.
Your service provider is your cell network, and you're creating a mobile hotspot for your devices to connect to.
And yeah, they think that it's something to do with the satellites, or the not the satellites, but the towers.
The towers, yeah.
Getting their cell phone signals off of, and just the location of where they are. If they're in the house by the lake, they have to go up on the hill. You know, like
are they doing everything through cell service, or do they have a LAN internet provider as well?
I think it's all
cell.
I think so.
So what? Yeah, darn it. Yeah, because the only way you could take advantage of more would be, first of all, they're getting a lousy cell signal. So they could get a booster that would hang in the window. So it would take in the cell signal and then it would reboost it in the house. But then if there isn't enough internet, even with the booster, then they might have to get more than one service. Like I know that cell internet around here, I've recently checked it out, they won't sell you can't purchase, let me use that wording for cell. you can't purchase cell internet service for more than 10 megabits a second. So if I purchase that one service, I could barely have both my kids using it at the same time for their Zoom calls. But that doesn't mean there isn't more internet available on that tower. It just means they won't give me more on my one service. And so that would be a combination of solutions. One would be getting a better signal in the house, and there are these cell boosters that you can buy that'll do that. You typically have to buy one that's compatible with your cell provider. And then the other solution would be purchasing another cell package so that you could split that bandwidth of that cell tower between the students. So none of that is a free solution. Those are expenses you have to be ready to incur.
Yeah.
Hi, Maggie. Hi, Fred. I don't know if I said hi earlier, Fred, but it's great to have you guys here.
Fred just shared something into our chat about Echo sharing your Wi-Fi with your neighbors.
The sidewalk talk. Didn't we talk about that last week?
A little bit.
Did you see my graphic from last week?
Yeah.
It was a sidewalk with Amazon all over it. If you look at our website, see, I mocked it up with little access points all over the sidewalk, Amazon being the main backbone of that internet. Fred, did you have anything to contribute to that? We had discussed it last week.
Amazon is putting it on all of their equipment unless you opt out. It's not if you want it, you add it. They're adding it whether you want it or not. Unless you opt out.
Well, that is the case, and it is for Sidewalk. It's anything that is labeled, branded Amazon's or Sidewalk Bridge, I think is what they call it. And I checked. Did you check your Amazon devices? Because it doesn't seem to be things like Echoes. It appears to be things like doorbells, security cameras, floodlights,
devices.
These kinds of devices that kind of face the outside of the house. And you're right. You
with
are
a camera.
Oh, say again, Dave.
It's basically anything with a camera.
Well, I guess it's kind of generalizing. I guess you could have an Amazon-enabled floodlight that doesn't have a camera on it, but a lot of them do. Why wouldn't you get one with a camera on it? But Sidewalk Bridge, I think, is the branding that you would look for if you were concerned or you were interested in participating in this. It's an interesting move by Amazon. Like we were talking about last week, there's a good Ars article that Richard had passed me that really plays up the fear factor. I don't know, Fred, do you have any fear after what you've done in your research of being part of that, Sidewalk Network?
Not really. I just upset that they're doing it, whether you say yes and you have to say no.
That's right. I think these are the points I was making last week that I think we have to keep in mind with this stuff is they're opting us in instead of allowing us to opt in. And yes. So I don't like setting that as a precedence for anything. Cheryl, what are you doing?
There's the Amazon sidewalk that you talked about.
Sidewalk, you're right.
and I didn't get it. I was impressed with the show us your dongle, and I missed the picture. So I just thought I'd share it anyways.
I have some really good GIMP skills these days. If you guys need a picture mocked up, I can do all kinds of layers and special effects. COVID has made me a graphic artist as long as I don't have to do the drawing.
Yeah, well, anyways, it's quite
cute. Amazon Sidewalk, or don't forget, anytime you're turning on a device to do extra function, that device is going to be slower doing its own function.
Oh, that's...
So if you've got a camera monitoring what you want for yourself, its response time potentially is going to go down a little from what you want it to do.
I think that's a concern. They said that would take a maximum of 80 kilobits a second, ours was really playing up this idea of fear security, but I know of security experts that have vetted the white papers of this. They're waiting for the devices to come out because what they've written down doesn't look like a real security risk, but then it always turns out to be the implementation that's the problem. And so it is another security surface. It's another place to be attacked. And if they implement it incorrectly, it could be a risk.
I bother broadcasting. It doesn't seem like it's needed by most people.
Yeah, I think my point last week was that I think you should be concerned about this, but not for the reasons that ours was lying out. My big point was what I call data encroachment, where they're just saying that you're going to participate by sharing your internet. You're sharing your internet to help them with their service. And I think we should be aware of that and not allow ourselves to be numb to that. There may be some time in the future where Amazon's approaching you and saying, look, we recognize your residents as having enough internet to really help us out. Maybe we'll help subsidize your internet connection if you don't mind us using it for some of our services. I can see a future of that as long as we're not blind to the way we're going forward. And that's what they're kind of doing here, is they're turning it on and hoping you won't go through the hassle of turning it off. And they're hoping you have enough internet that you won't notice it's missing.
So if I have a Ring doorbell on my front door and I run out naked to pick up the newspaper and the door slams behind me, how many people are going to see me?
Only the people you've authorized. But while you're out there naked, if the neighbor's lost dog comes up and starts humping your leg, it'll send a signal back to your neighbor through your doorbell that you're being molested by their dog and to come get it. And that's what we're really talking about is getting these dogs under control.
I want to know if that was a hypothetical question.
It was too specific, wasn't it?
I think it
hasn't happened lately. My secret is out.
Asking for a friend.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But I mean, that's the intention behind it. The intention is pretty amazing because I love the idea of clipping little bits of internet throughout your community and repurposing it for things like that. I mentioned last week that Apple has just done something amazing by turning on these AirTags, because what people don't grasp is Apple has one of the largest networks that exists in the United States, because they can push out a service on their platform and millions of people are all of a sudden participating in that service. That's how these AirTags are so effective. These little tracker tags that you can put on your luggage and your keys and your dog and your girlfriend if you want to know where she's going. You can you can put these tags on, and because it's by Apple, simply because it's an Apple service, the chances of that tag getting found out there in the United States is so incredibly easy, because without a doubt, within moments, that tag is hit two or three iPhones, and the iPhone goes, hey, this tag hit me, and sends it back to the database. As the dog's walking through the neighborhood, it's like, oh, I hit Cindy's iPhone. Yeah, there's the dog. Oh, I hit John's iPhone. Oh, there's the dog now. He's a block away. This information is being collected so that the owner of that tag can go and use the Find My app and figure out where the dog went. It's a system that's been around for a long time. There's been a couple of these tracking tags. Tile is the only one that's coming to mind at the moment. I'm sorry. I'm sure there's two or three others that we could look at. But what they suffered from before this was that the only people that could send back information about a lost Tile was people that were using Tile. And that's a much smaller network of people than iPhone owners. So your laptop bag that was stolen might not show up, or you left it on a bus. It may not show up for hours until it runs across another person that's using the Tile app. Whereas when it's using the iPhones, that it's never going to leave the presence of an iPhone, even if it's lost your presence, because of the sheer numbers of iPhones that are out there. And now that I've said all that, I just want to reiterate, Tile has finally been able, since this Apple thing, and Tile's not part of the Apple thing, with Amazon doing this, Tile can choose to be part of Amazon's infrastructure, because there's going to be security cameras, and there's going to be doorbells, and there's going to be floodlights all over. There already is. And by turning this on, Amazon has turned on a competitive Find network with Apple. And so actually, you have a choice, whereas before you didn't. You either had a crummy service that worked all right, or Apple flips the switch. Now you've got to switch over to Apple to have an amazing service. Amazon turns on the switch, and that crummy service that was available to you now becomes a robust service. So I think it's really, when Apple announced its stuff, we all watched. We're like, Tile's going to crumble. They can't. They can't maintain if they're not going to be part of Apple's network. I mean, they were really being siphoned into Apple's network. It was a surprise when they chose not to be part of it, because it's David and Goliath. It very much is. They were watching the reckoning of their business. And because Amazon's doing this, they actually have another way to be part of a grand, robust network. Now, with Apple, you're subsidizing that network by their high prices, and you're opted in. You don't really have a choice. That's all the Find My network. Your iPhone, since I think about iOS 13, has been sending this kind of data back to Apple. Without your consent, it's part of the system. It's randomized. It's made anonymous using algorithms. So it's not like I'm looking at Paul's iPhone when this data appears. So there's all that. But it is going on without you having a switch to turn it on or off. It's part of the ecosystem. I think I was going to make a point beyond that, but I have exhausted my lips. Does anyone have a comment to make on any of that?
On your exhausted lips?
No. On this ecosystem of Find stuff.
No.
I think that the two fears is the opt-in and the data encroachment. I mean, that's what's happening on the Apple side of things, too. You're sending that information back to Apple using your cell plan, using your internet plan. So if that actually accumulates to some significant portion, there's a percentage of your bill you can attribute to services you have no control over. And you've become part of it because you were automatically opted into it. Hey, the Sid Meister's here. Hello, Sid. Welcome.
How's it going?
It's going great. We were just talking about, what have we done so far? We've done birthdays for Mom and me. We're talking about last week's artwork. We're talking about Amazon Sidewalk right now. You're all caught up.
Cool.
Yeah, hey, Sid, have you brought any topics for today's computer club?
No, I do not have any topics for today's computer club.
All right.
I'm currently playing with our phone company down here, ACS, getting a new line spliced in.
Oh, as part of the job.
Yeah.
Well, you're talking on your iPhone right now using AT&T service. Where are you located?
Yep. I am currently in Anchor Point, Alaska, sitting on the old Sterling Highway.
So you couldn't be much farther away from humanity.
Oh, no. I'm right in the middle of humanity. I'm like right off the main highway. I mean, the cell tower, the cell tower is about 200 yards away. I'm doing pretty good.
Yeah, but we're not talking metropolis. We're talking town smaller than what? Smaller than Empalme?
Smaller than San Carlos.
Oh, definitely.
How about La Manga? Yes. How about La Manga?
Smaller than San Carlos residents in the summer.
There you go.
Yeah. But bigger than La Manga.
But excellent cell service. That's always great to find out in the boonies of Alaska.
Well, we'll see what happens when this guy's done over here.
Mom was on, but she's gone. I had some Alaskan news that I thought would be interesting to share as far as topics go. Apparently, the Alaskan cell health services are still suffering weeks after the cyber attack. Did you see that, Sid?
Yeah.
It was in the ADN.
By overcrowding?
Alaska Public Radio. I've given up on ADN. They're wrong more than anything.
Oh, well, then you're here to verify this is a true story, though. Apparently, back in the middle of May, their health and social services server infrastructure was hacked. Probably ransomware. I didn't read the details of it. But because of it, they haven't been able to bring anything back online. So they've been doing things by pencil and paper since.
Like COVID shots?
No, this would be things like background checks, things that have to happen within their services. Like,
background checks, most records are still having the hard copies pulled.
Like they're literally pulling files out of file cabinets to deal with stuff.
Yes.
And is it a health authority?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the State Health and Social Services.
Yeah. In fact, I think there was a list of like 18 services that got turned off in May because of security concerns. And all of those services that used to be websites and connected to each other have been phone calls and paper documents.
Well, half of our state government with our new cybersecurity that just came online as of the 1st has locked themselves out of most of what they need to be into.
It is incredibly slow recovery time, and I suspect it's going to make them re-examine their cybersecurity policies there statewide. They obviously
it's fishing
do not.
Season. Everybody's gone.
Everyone's fishing. That's a genuine concern if you're trying to get anything done in the summer. Well, there's Mom. I was just sharing with everybody that the Alaskan Health and Human Services cyber attack that has brought you guys offline for the last couple of weeks, since the middle of May. Had you seen that in the news? I'm going to put this link in our chat here. For weeks now, Mom, people have been using phone calls and paper documents because their websites have all been shut down for fear of cyber, more problems, security problems. Not more attacks. I imagine it's ransomware and they don't want to flip the switch until they have a solution or a backup installed. They don't want to encrypt what they've already got.
Okay, so this is the Alaska one. Like, there's been the pipeline one. There's been something else, and they attribute it to Russia?
They suspect a Russian outfit. They've named an actual group. I forgot the name of it. It was on BBC this morning.
Are you referring to the pipeline hack, Sid?
Yeah, the Colonial Pipeline.
Yeah.
On the East Coast, it kind of shut everybody's fuel service down. Gave all those great videos of people putting gasoline in garbage bags.
Yeah. That was part of it, too. Yeah.
They've recovered.
I think we lost you, Sid. I do. Sid is talking to himself in his truck. Or can you guys hear me? Maybe I lost you guys. I think I lost you guys. That's right. Everybody's down and I'm gone. Where is my internet?
That just pops up because you're running the software.
Hey, I'm back. Sorry about that. The new Google Meet actually popped up on my screen saying you lost your internet connection.
You're back.
But I'm back. I'm sorry. I missed the last few things Sid was saying and I didn't understand what Dave was just saying.
Yeah.
I'm saying the software used in that ransomware on the pipeline was rental software, not something that somebody created and used themselves, but they actually post on the internet the fact that you can rent the ransomware software.
So this is the new entrepreneurship activity? Oh, boy.
Mom, you couldn't be more correct. I'm sorry, Dave, go ahead.
Yeah, it's rent your ransomware software.
The people that did it, I've forgotten the name of the group. What was the name of the group?
Yeah, I forgot. I noticed the pipeline company got their money back, basically.
Yeah, they did.
But what they had was they had a website. They had a customer support department. I'm talking about the ransomware group. Yeah. They had a description of the technology that you could rent. They had customer support agents that you could call for help setting it up. This is the ransomware hackers.
Right.
We're running it as a business.
Okay, I have a computer question, or maybe I should say my lack of memory question.
Certainly.
On StreamYo.com, I've lost my notes as to how to run it or without signing on, like as a guest, and which plugin you were suggesting.
Say that again. You've lost your notes for how to run
I had some notes on how to run it where you didn't have to log on and give them your, you know, password or log into the network. You could run it as a guest. And
what is it you're running?
Streamio.
Streamio. I'm sorry.
To get started, to find things.
Okay, so in Streamio, it's a little hidden because, you know, they want you to sign up, and so they make it a little painful.
Right.
I'm going to try and open it up while we're talking. Maybe I can get a visual on the screen. But when you turn it on and it asks you to sign in, if you scroll to the very bottom of that screen, it might be just a couple of hidden lines. It'll have sign in with
something
email.
About a guest.
I think it's guest or email. One of them's first. It's like sign in with your own account. It's got you know what? It's coming up on my screen right now. We'll get the wording correct here in a second. Because it seems like you have to choose an alternate sign in other than Facebook, other than Google, and then under that form you scroll down and you choose guest log, and it's just the words I'm not remembering at the moment. Hey, but Dave, you know.
But the other thing that we.
Go ahead, Cheryl.
Sorry, Scott, the other thing that we asked about was the add-ons you recommended, but you didn't recommend add-ons in Streamio. That was in Kodi. Am I correct in that?
No, we went through some add-ons in Streamio as well. And I was going to mention to David that if you go to the website, I've got the Streamio presentation there. You have to go through it a bit, but it's got the whole thing we did online. So here I am at the login screen. I hope that's clear for people. And I've got it full screen, okay. So I don't have to scroll anything because it's all fitting on my screen. And down here it says sign up with email. So I'm going to click on that. And then I've got to hit this accept terms and conditions, that one. You don't have to accept the others. And then below at the bottom it says guest login.
Okay, thanks.
And now it's not tracking you in any way other than as an anonymous number assigned.
Well, Scott, I've never logged in. I logged in as guest, but now when I start up Streamio, it just goes to this page. It doesn't ask me about logging in or anything.
You know, Bill, that's the experience I had for years using this software, and it's only been in the last few iterations that every time I turn it on, I have to sign in.
No, I don't have to do that at all. And it is tracking me somehow, because if I start watching something and then I stop, it will allow me to pick up where I logged off, where I quit, like Netflix.
Yes, yes.
So it keeps track of where I'm at in the movie. It's keeping track of something somewhere.
It will. Even if you don't sign into it, it'll keep track of what you're watching. I haven't used Streamio on my computer in a while, but if I started something up from the selection, it would be added to that menu at the top like you've experienced.
Right. And then when I come back to it, if I'm halfway through the movie, it will start up halfway through the movie.
That's right. And it's actually pretty good at that. Hey, Dave, if you're looking at my screen, here's some of the plugins that I recommended last time we were doing this. This TPB Plus, this Torrentino.
I find one of the ones I use all the time is 123 something.
Okay.
It almost always picks up the movie.
I am afraid to do too much on it. You remember our Kodi got rated, well, actually, maybe I should do it. It got rated 18 or above. And there isn't a good reason for them to put an age restriction on that video. But I think they didn't like the idea that I was showing off Kodi the way I was showing off Kodi.
Well, Okay, a couple other comments. For users of ExpressVPN, are you aware that they've come up with a new software that basically replaces OpenVPN? And it's not so much providing faster, but what it's doing is its primary purpose is to simplify and make much easier what happens when you lose a signal and disconnect and have to reconnect. So the end result might be, if you're using ExpressVPN with this new technique, then something like the buffering might disappear, because that frequently happens when you've lost the entire signal.
Yes, Dave, I think we've talked about it in the past. They did that like at the starting of this year. They released their own proprietary VPN protocol. And you're absolutely right. The whole intention...
Now they're making it more available for other devices, including the routers.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize it wasn't available on the routers. But their intention with it is, because our VPN protocols are very old and our networking technologies have become so much more advanced, and the types of things that we're doing with our networks are so different, that they've taken that into account. And the best analogy I can give is just that the older technology, the older protocol, would take a lot longer to reconnect if you ended up disconnected. And the things that you were doing across it might just fail during that time period. And so they reworked their protocol so that it would have a faster, easier time reconnecting. And hopefully what you're doing across it won't fail within that time period. It's a problem.
Okay, Scott, you and I talked about this a little bit a while ago, that I found by doing a bunch of speed tests that when I use the ExpressVPN, the most I'm going to get is about 30 megabits per second.
That's right.
And my internet is coming in at 200, 300 megabits per second. That's a drop of a factor of 10.
Yes.
It's, you know, like it's almost unacceptable. Why would I have a fast internet service? So I'm going to use that.
Well, and what we talked about before is just the very nature of a VPN puts overhead on your internet connection. So even if you would never get a 200, even if you're getting 200 megabits documented solid, you would not get that when you turned on the VPN. It would marginally be lower than that, like 190 or 180.
But it's never
that high. And like I had mentioned it to you before, that's a selling point for a VPN service, is that when you go and you start comparing VPNs, you might buy one over the other because it'll guarantee you a certain bandwidth available to you.
Well,
in fact, on that note, I found security.org has an article they wrote that was updated on my birthday, comparing the top VPN providers of 2021. I'm going to stick that in our chat so that, and I meant it specifically for you, Bill, so that you could read through it and see the different providers and what their sales points are.
Yeah, I think I went through it. I don't remember much about it. But ExpressVPN has a test function in their main menu that will go through and test as many of the servers that you want. And the highest you get is about 27.
I'm sure Stacy probably already knows and just doesn't want to talk about it. Oh, was somebody talking to...
I just muted you, Mom.
Anyway, when you test ExpressVPN, you use their test option. The highest you get is 27, 28 out of one Washington, USA, I think.
Yeah, that number 30 seems to be a consistent number that's provided from VPN providers.
Oh, so they must choke it down.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You think they've got to make it available to a number of different customers. And VPN customers are different from your regular internet customers. Your regular internet customers are connecting and disconnecting, and they're doing different activities, or they're sitting not doing any activities. VPN customers are consistently connected to the VPN. They're consistently being managed, and there's consistently an overhead associated with it from the VPN business's point of view. So they have to be able to manage how much they're going to allocate to each one of their customers. And unlike an ISP like Telmex, for example, where the machine can see, nobody's using that, and allocate all that to another customer. customer. The VPN customers, I would bet that's probably part of their protocol redesign, is being able to move those customers to different bandwidths depending on how much they're actually using. I'm speculating, but that's the nature of it. Well, cool. I put that link in our chat as well, and I will put it on today's meeting. What else we got here?
I have another question.
Dave, I'm so glad you showed up because I am really unorganized today.
What's your recommendation as to where to attach smart devices? In other words, as we get more and more of them, do you think it makes sense to create a guest network
Absolutely.
On your router? Or do you think, same with a VPN?
You know, on your router, there's a lot of sophisticated routers now, Dave, that allow you to have two networks going, your main network and your guest network. I think that a good, solid, secure router like the old Airport Extremes, there's some Linksys and some Asus routers out there that I feel really comfortable using guest networks on. I am in a home environment. I feel a little different than in a corporate environment, but I definitely think that your smart devices should probably be on a different network. This is a hard thing to do when that's not the way you've been doing things. But one of the advantages to using cloud services for your smart devices, and we're talking about cameras and doorbells, things of that nature, if they're cloud associated services, then you don't have to worry about being on the same network with them. So you could quite literally hook up a second router and put all your security cameras and lights and your echoes, all those on a separate network. And you would do that because these devices are not going to be as secure as your computer, as your phone. It's just not possible. That $35 webcam that you bought off Amazon on the day's deal is probably sending information about your network back to China because that's what they've been caught doing. And whether it hurts you or not will be figured out in the future, but I suspect it won't hurt you personally unless there's some hacker that recognizes you're using that $35 camera and goes, hey, here's an opportunity to get into somebody's network. And so keeping them on a separate network apart from your main data flows would be the most secure thing to do, Dave. And that's security consultant's advice. And you know what you do? You do this just kind of, it's easier to imagine with different pieces of equipment than it is all in the same equipment. And the goal you would be shooting for pure security would be three routers. It's a three router solution. And there's the one router that's connected to the internet that comes into your house. And then off of that router, you connect two other routers. And one of those routers is dedicated to all your activity, your banking, your emailing, your web surfing, your porn. All of that goes down one router. And then the other router is for your doorbells, your security cameras, your smart lights. You might even put your Echo devices on there. And that way you have segregated the activities that you would like to have secure from the devices that you can't control how secure they are.
So where would you use your VPN? And I only got two. How did you say three?
Well, the three is because there's a first one that comes from your internet provider, and you connect the other two like they are wired computers to that first router.
Got it.
Now, you can do this in software. You can buy a router that includes guest network. And so what I'm describing conceptually is easier to imagine as three pieces of equipment, but they can do it in software with guest networks and main networks. The issue, though, is to pick one that's dedicated to security between those two networks so that it's not possible to bridge across the networks through the device. And if I was in a corporate environment, I wouldn't rely on the software. I would physically have three routers because I could just pull the plug on one if it became an issue. Whereas I would bring down the works if I had it all running through one device that was doing it in software.
And if you add a mesh network into this, I would think the mesh network would be working on basically the network for the smart devices, because that's where you need to go around the concrete walls.
Yeah, I guess I would have to recommend that. And again, if you trust your mesh network, I've got the same network that Paul has, that Bill has, these Deco M5, the Deco TP-Link M5 mesh network. And it does include a guest network that you can flip on in your software. And you can give it a name and a password, and you can assign a bunch of devices to that guest network. I actually already had another network running right beside it, so I've never turned on the guest network. I haven't done any research into how secure that guest network is. And if any of you are interested in doing what we're talking about, that would be the first thing that I would research with the M5s, is how secure the guest network is.
So do you think it'd be cheaper to have the 3 than to have one of those special ones?
Well, what gets expensive is more equipment. So like the mesh network that I have and Bill has and Paul has, they are effective for our home networks because there's 3 different devices. It was a 3-pack, and you've spread them around your house. But that 3-pack at the time was selling for $150 to $180. It was a great price for what it was giving us.
Mm-hmm.
What's typical for a mesh network is to be quite a bit more expensive than one router, to be something like $300 for a 3-pack or $350 for a 3-pack.
Is that what the Deco M5 costs now?
No, not the M5, but the M5 is the older technology now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so if you're looking, their competitors have been traditionally more expensive, and the newest stuff is definitely more expensive. And so you'd be comparing those kinds of prices to the traditional types of routers if you're going to buy 3. But you're doing those for different, again, if you're going to use a guest network, the best of both worlds is you've got a mesh network that supports guests, and security experts have reviewed the equipment and said it's a secure way to do things.
Hmm.
That's the best of both worlds. Then you have internet everywhere in that mesh, and your smart devices can take advantage of it, and they don't have to touch the network where you do most all your activity. So that's the perfect world solution. But I haven't done that research on the mesh network I'm using. And offhand, I can't think of a network that I've done that kind of research for. But I have heard stories of different pieces of equipment that the guest network was just a different password. And they were able to traverse the equipment into the other network because the only level of security the guest network gave was a different password. So that's what to be on the lookout if you're going to set up like that. Also, I did say the perfect world. I meant that for consumers. Because if you did have a security problem, you are running both those networks off of the same equipment. If you did discover something that made you want to shut down that network, you're shutting everything down. You're shutting all your smart devices and all your daily use devices from the internet while you resolve whatever the security problem found. And so that, in a sense, is, and why I said in a corporate environment, I would have physical pieces of equipment for the different jobs so I could bring down one set of jobs without affecting the other set of jobs. Have we got any other questions? David, thank you for all your topics. I'm kind of recovering from last night's birthday party, and I have not gone too much depth of research to the topics I've brought. So it's great to have some questions out there. I'm happy to answer any other questions, follow up on stuff we've already talked about.
I have a question. I've just heard a couple of little things about this, but it's the Amazon unclaimed wholesale sales or something. I just got one up on my Facebook. It says whiteboard-luck.site, unclaimed Amazon Walmart targeted wholesale items being sold. Amazon unclaimed packages, all new items sold. And it looks like you pay with PayPal and you get bins full of stuff.
Can you show us your screen or put a link up so that we can look at it? I have not done any research into this, but I've read stories on the internet of people that buy pallets of unsold Amazon goods or returned Amazon goods.
Yeah.
And they're like storage wars, right? You pay a certain price for a pallet and you don't know what's going to come out of the boxes. Is that what you're describing?
Well, I don't know what it's about, and I wondered if anybody did, but maybe it's something that we should maybe put on the list for another day.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be interesting to know about. What was it? There was, I think back when we started doing virtual memories or virtual meetings, one of you folks, I think it was Bill or Cheryl, one of you folks had talked about a news article where they followed Amazon Trump's trucks to dump products, returned products that weren't going to be sold again. And they were just dumping them in landfills.
Dumping them and driving over them with a cat.
Yeah, I mean, what a crazy world we live in.
Well, when you think about it, when you take a small item, not, I don't know, a $10, $15 item that gets returned, they're not going to go through the process of trying to figure out whether it's any good or it functions and try to put it basically back on the shelf. They're just going to throw it away, or they're going to put it in a bin and sell it. That's what they do with it.
Even more so, if it's less than $10, they don't even want it back.
No,
you got to find your own bin to throw it away.
Well, we've experienced that a couple of times now, and not just $10 things. The biggest was the Shark vacuum cleaner that was had a problem, had a squeak in it, and they basically tried to troubleshoot it over the internet and didn't. So he says, "Well, we're going to send you a new one," and they never asked for the other one back. So the one's downstairs now, the one with the squeak in it, and I routinely set it on my 8-ball table. Let it clean the table for me.
Ah, yeah, that's right. The felt cleaner.
I got a dedicated maid that comes in and cleans the felt on the 8-ball table. Her name is Susie.
Rosie.
Well, Rosie's upstairs.
Susie's the pool table cleaner.
Yeah, Rosie's the one that's
downstairs maid.
Named after the Jetsons maid.
Ah, okay.
Hey, Bill, with those that automatic vacuum cleaner, how does it handle area rug?
It just ours just climbs right on top of it. We do right now we have a big area rug in the living room, and I've got the map set. Use it like on ours. You can set a map, and it just comes down the hallway, and it does that rug. It doesn't do the hardwood unless I actually tell it.
Oh yeah,
go ahead.
Well, I just wonder. And what about fringes on carpets?
Well, the other one, this one is slightly different than the one that it replaced. It has a different kind of roller on it, like a sweeper, and it has very little problems with fringes and things that are laying on the floor. You have a towel laying on the floor.
May I expand a little bit on that? It
sure.
has an algorithm. It has a fringes and cables algorithm. And so as it's picking stuff up, the program is looking for the behavior of the cleaner when it encounters fringes and cables on the floor and goes into a process of getting away from them. So it feels its rollers behaving in a way that it has learned means it's picked up a cable or picked up some fringe of a carpet. And then it runs a program to free itself from those items. And so the question of how well it does with it depends on what model you've got, how recent a model and like Bill said, the rollers are important too, because they're your ability to get out of those situations with those robots are both a software and a hardware solution.
Yeah, this one, the new one has a little bit different beater bar is what I call them.
Beater bar,
it's got one half, like two sets of brushes, real brushes, and two sets of rubberized or plastic beater. So it's half and half. It does a much better job of picking certain things up. The other one is just straight four brushes on a spiral, and it doesn't do near as good a job, and it gets caught up in fringes way more so than your newer
model.
Do you know the model name for the good one?
Oh, I can send it to you.
Okay, I'd appreciate that, Bill.
The Shark Ninja, but I don't
Ninja.
Know.
Is it,
this is a self-cleaning one. It goes back to its station and empties itself into the big bin. And then you clean the big bin most of the time.
Bill, yours is also Wi-Fi enabled, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's, I have one of the original iRobots. It's horrible with cables. It gets stuck in things. But some of those problems could probably have been solved with a software update. But the original was never internet enabled. So I got what I bought.
Our very first one was a Roomba, and it's a randomizer. Hummingbird's back. It just does random in the room and basically thinks it's done once it has a detector that detects the debris when it's picking stuff up, and what? It'll say, "Oh, I haven't gotten anything to in the detector lately, so I must be done."
Yeah.
And then it just stops. It stops right there and gives you a signal. It says, take me back home, whatever. It won't go back to its base.
Well, and it is more than it's detecting debris within a space that it originally calculated. Like, it goes through this pattern where it starts where you left it, and maybe you stick it in the middle of the room and it spins out a spiral until it hits something. And then it does like a 90 degree direction from what it hit until it hits something else. And then it does it another time and another time. And it plots out this relative idea of space of the room. And it uses that number to find debris within that amount of space to determine whether it's clean or not. Go ahead.
The newer ones have a mapping function in it. I don't think it's not GPS. It's an algorithm as well. Then when you first use it, you just turn it on and it just bumps around the whole house. It just keeps going. It makes a map. And then you can go in and designate areas inside this map. Like, it's set on Tuesdays and Fridays or Tuesdays and Thursdays. It cleans one area. On a couple other days, it cleans a different area. And every day it comes down and cleans the kitchen. It's one of those things that you get used to. And then every once in a while you think, whoa, like, you're standing there and here she comes down the hallway, trundle, 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 headed to clean the kitchen. And you think, holy shit, that was the future a few years ago. Like, how is this possible? I am not astounded every time I see that. I've become accustomed to it. I just expect her to come and clean the kitchen. it's technology numbness, I guess, is what, I don't know what, there must be a term for that.
Right. Where it's become so, it's normalized. It's technology normalized.
It's normalized.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like we've become absolutely normalized with the concept that we can climb in this aluminum tube and fly somewhere, you know, be transported somewhere in a few hours to another place.
I want to call this back to our conversation about Internet of Things devices and security, because Bill's vacuum is a perfect example of something that should be on a guest network, because that vacuum has a map of his house. The associating that with more data would just be more dangerous. You do want it on the internet, so it'll have firmware updates, set securities on it, because that could be a point of contingency for security. You could target Bill directly and not only know his financial situation, but know the layout of his house.
Yeah, you have to have a certain financial status in order to have it. literally.
Just thinking, if it was running on your main network, the hacker could watch all your bank transactions and what your Roomba's doing.
Well, this one doesn't, and now you can get them. The newer ones have cameras that do actual visual layouts, and you can use the Roomba as a security system. You can tell it to go into the kitchen and look around. Something's going on in there that you don't know about.
So you can bet that'll be one of the next things that's on Amazon's Sidewalk Bridge, right? It'd be like, oh, we need a pocket of Wi-Fi outside Bill's window, and there's nothing here. Well, we'll move the Roomba up to the window. Now we've got Wi-Fi on the sidewalk.
Absolutely. No, it's amazing. It's that it's available and available at a very minimal cost. If you really think about it, you've got a damn robot wandering around in here with the artificial intelligence that's cleaning the house.
Yeah, it's very impressive. Hey, Mom, I've been watching you get disconnected and reconnected. I'm curious, have you ever tried to do this meeting from your iPad? And you're muted right now.
Well, that one's muted, but there's two of her.
Yeah, let me get this one off the screen. There we go.
All right, is the muted one off? Or?
Yeah, the mute's off. We can hear you now.
Can't find my iPad.
Oh, well, that doesn't help.
Somewhere in this house, I know it is. I just can't seem to locate it.
Well, I think for a long time now, you've been having problems with that laptop in this meeting.
I'm waiting for my son to get up here to fix it.
Boy, at the rate we're going these days, you might be in the market for a new computer before I get up there.
Oh, dear.
Well, that's what you're finding.
So check the freezer.
You just buy a new one, and you'll find the old one right away.
There you go.
Or just check the freezer.
Check the freezer.
Well, what's sad is it's getting old now, and I really haven't utilized it much because I was going to use it with my camera because I have a system where I can hook it up to my camera to take my pictures. And so I've been waiting so I could see. It's taken a few years. I think maybe I'm going to be able to see now. So now I got to find that iPad.
Yeah.
Hey, Scott, I got an iPhone question for you.
Oh, okay.
I dropped my iPhone out of my pocket. It has a screen protector on it, but it didn't protect the iPhone. It landed right on a corner, and that was the biggest problem.
Ouch.
And it broke the glass. What is a reasonable kind of cost to replace that glass?
Is it the glass, or is it the screen behind the glass, or is it both?
No, it's just the glass, because when you use it, it's fine. There's no, you can see the cracks in it, but there's no bleed in the system. So it's literally, I'm sure, just the protective glass.
And what model iPhone is it?
Oh, i6s.
6s, good. Yeah, if you were going to buy an older iPhone these days, you don't want to go any older than a 6s. That is the last fully supported iPhone.
Yeah.
What that should be is a digitalizer replacement. I'm just doing a Google on iPhone 6s digitalizer replacements. I'm going to give you the most expensive price because I'm pulling it off the iFixit website, and notoriously their parts are more expensive than anywhere else on the network, but what they are the best parts. I mean, if you want to make sure you're getting a genuine part that works the way an Apple part does, you should use the iFixit recommendation, even though it's a monstrous price. And it looks like you can buy it from them for $70, $69.99.
U.S. Yeah, well, I was in one of these We Fix cell phone places, and he quoted me $129 to replace the glass.
So that would be the part and the labor.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I'm sure I can just pry that sucker off and glue a new one on.
Yeah. I wouldn't.
That's sarcasm.
I would take it to my brother-in-law to do it because he's got all the tools to do that kind of work, and that's what you need. You need the tools and the experience. Otherwise, you're breaking other things in the phone. I know you're joking, but it really is a joke. It's a joke to think I could do it.
No, he did have i6 reconditioned used ones, a 6S.
Yeah.
For $229, $100 more, and it was a new phone.
Was it the same capacity? Was it the same capacity as your current phone?
I don't know what.
Was it a 64 gigabyte or a 32 gigabyte? Because that's.
I don't even know what I got.
Yeah, no, that's where you can price match, because it's not a bad thing to look at the repair price versus buying a refurbished one. And he might even give you a core price. Like was that a price if you gave him your old phone, or was that just the price?
No, I just asked him if he had it said on his front marquee, reconditioned phones or used phones. So I asked him, and he just pointed me towards the case. There was a 6S in there that was $229, $100 more.
So those are the questions that you would want to ask in that circumstance, besides physically looking at it to make sure it doesn't have any kind of damage that you would not want to live with, scratches and so on. You would want to ask him the capacity of that one versus the one you have now for storage, because that's the main factor in the price difference of the same two models, is how much storage does the device have.
The other thing is that we suspect that the screen protector has a warranty on it. It seems to me the warranty was good for replacing the glass if it got damaged.
It could very well be. If you're using Apple Care, that's year to 3 years. There might be one with your cell carrier. Where'd you buy the phone?
Las Vegas, AT&T.
So you might have a service contract with AT&T. Sid, do you have a service contract with AT&T? Is Sid still with us?
It says he is.
So where do you think you're getting a warranty if it's not from your supplier or from Apple?
From the actual we bought the screen protector.
Oh, he's there. Sid, what's your service contract with AT&T? Oh, I think we lost him.
Oh.
Anyway, go ahead, Bill.
Well, we bought a the screen protector off of Amazon from
I have Apple Care. I bought my phone from the Apple Store.
Oh, you bought yours from the Apple Store, so you've got Apple Care now.
Okay, so we bought the AT&T, we bought the iPhone and the screen protector from the AT&T originally. But I think the screen protector warranty only protects the screen protector, and it will replace the screen protector. You called it digitizer, not a glass. I need to know what the term is for this.
What a digitalizer is that panel of glass in front of your display that picks up your finger movements. It's the thing that gets cracked. I mean, actually, it's a number of layers. There's glass, a digitalizer, and then there's a screen. But in my experience, I think the glass and the digitalizer come together as one part. I'm looking at a picture right now of the digitalizer, and it looks like all three things are together. So you may not be able to do a genuine replacement of the broken glass without also replacing the LCD display. This is what I'm looking at here.
Oh, so it could be the LCD display. It could be the digitizer, it could be the glass, or it could be the screen.
Well, yeah, it could be. No, it's going to be the glass or the digital. In my experience, the glass and the digitalizer are typically sold as one piece, and the LCD is the other piece. But they can also be sold as one piece. Like, they're not intended to be separate. So even though your LCD display is working just fine, the only way to fix the broken glass part is replace the whole thing.
Oh, I see. Yeah,
but it depends on the model, and I just don't know. I don't fix iPhones, so I don't
know. Well, this guy, you know, the repair guy, you know, looked at it and said $129. Yeah,
he totally knows, because that's his whole business. Is replacing.
Yeah, well, that's all he does.
Are you still looking on my screen? So here's an example of the repair that's being done. Shattered glass, using a suction cup to get it off.
It just literally lifts off of it?
Yeah, well, you see that seam there? I'm pointing at I'm pointing to the screen with my finger. Like, you see my finger.
But I can see it. I can see it.
Pulled down, yeah.
And so you're lifting that seam with special tools to get that broken glass off of there.
I think just a screwdriver and pry that sucker off.
Oh yeah, that's amazing results, I'll tell you. When you do that, you get these extras on your desk, like little pieces of glass, you know, little fringe pieces of plastic.
Oh, little spring that goes spring and lands over there on the other
and
side
box
of the
tape.
Table.
When you're done, make sure you use the clear box tape to put it back together. That way you can see the screen you're trying to touch.
Don't
use the brown box tape. It's really hard to see the screen.
It's hard to see through. Well, what amazes me is this: there's cracks over a third of the glass. It works perfectly. I just took the old screen protector off and put a new screen protector on it so that you're not touching the broken stuff. And it works fine. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the phone other than it's got some cracks in.
That's what your hack for your children is. When they come to you with a shattered phone and you don't want to do this fix, you put a screen protector across it so their fingers won't bleed.
Yeah.
And then they go on.
You don't shave the fingerprints off.
That's right.
Well, considering we paid $49.99 for this phone, was the original cost for the iPhone.
Well, that was with a contract too, right?
Yeah, that's with our contract. But with our screen protector cost $35.
What?
So...
Well, yeah, I'm with you then, Cheryl. I think you ought to send an email to that screen protector to find out how do you get to take advantage of it, because they'll probably just hand you the money for the screen protector.
Well, yeah. you know, then the second time we bought a screen protector, we bought it on Amazon and we bought a no-name one. But the first one that we bought in the AT&T store with the case and the protector, all the case, the protector added up to way more money than the phone.
God, look at this hair. Crazy.
I'll pay the $129. I want to watch him do it.
You never want to watch us do this stuff.
What makes you think I'm on the other side of the fence?
It just gives you a heart murmurs when you're prying at a piece. And you're like, oh, God, don't break the plastic. I just...
Before we got on to the iPhone, you guys were talking about the robot.
I'm going to hold up a project I've been working on.
Oh, there. Let's see it. Well, get rid of your presentation. Let me get rid of that.
Hold on a second. So this is the screen. This is the computer, the laptop.
I'm thinking duct tape would work.
The top cover. Here's the bezel of the screen.
Now, Gorilla Tape. Gorilla makes a clear tape. Works great. You can see right through it.
And that's the top cover. You call this the top cover, and that's the bottom cover. Top cover, so, bottom cover, screen, and bezel.
What makes this worthwhile? Your labor to actually fix this puppy.
Yeah, you know, it was a labor of love because it was a child computer. They were using it for online school, and their webcam went out. And so I got into it because I had some free time on my hands. I was going to give them a good price. I discovered the webcam was easy enough to get out. Like, before I disassembled anything, I could use the prying that you saw on the iPhone. I can use those same tools and pull this bezel off without removing a screw, as long as I'm gentle. And I could reach inside and grab the webcam and replace it with another one. I get online, they're selling the webcam for $10. I'm like, well, that's easy. So I offer it to the customer. They're into it. I get the webcam, hook it up, same problem. Like, no, it's a new webcam. It should work. I talked to the vendor. The vendor's like, you know what? In this particular case, typically that problem is a cable. It's not the camera. It's the cable. Now, I typically wouldn't have... The reason I thought it was the webcam, to be fair, is it's an HP product. And it's much more likely something complicated is broken on it than something simple like a cable.
Yeah,
any
but you
other
never
name
liked
brand,
HP.
I could have blamed the cable, but it's an HP. I just assumed the webcam was broken. I had to design my own methodology for checking the cable, which included merging all the connectors. This is like, I don't know, like a 30-pin connector that's all flat pins. And so I used a piece of aluminum foil to bridge all of those connectors. I put a multimeter in that side. And then on this side, that little tiny connector that you can't even see if I get it up to the camera. That little connector has little pins on it. It has 6 pins on it. I had to shave down a copper wire to get small enough to touch the pin and wrap it around the other end of my multimeter. And I finally started getting good tests, and I'm like, there, I'm going to prove to this vendor his camera's bad. And I got 4 out of 6 wires working. I'm like, no, it's a bad test. I spent all afternoon trying to prove the cable was fine, and all I did was reaffirm the cable's what needs to be replaced. To replace the cable, I had to do this. And I'm still waiting for a new cable. I had to dismount it. I had to open it up, dismount it. And I'm still going to have to take this screen off. I'm going to have to cut some tape on the back of it to get the old cable out. Because this cable doubles as a display cable as well. And there may only be 6 wires up here, but there's 20-something wires that go into the display. So I really got myself into a can of worms for a computer that's really not worth much. But they'll be happy with it.
So let me ask you a technical question.
And I'm a firm believer in if it can be fixed, it should be fixed. So
there you
reuse.
Go.
Yeah, I don't. Reuse.
So if you were actually charging the right amount, and I know your rates are pretty low, but what would that be worth by the time you're all done?
If I knew I was going to do that much work, to start, it's $100. If you brought me a project that I knew I was going to have to disassemble and get it reassembled without breaking any of the plastic tabs and keeping track of every screw, before we even talk about what kind of repair it is, it's $100 to start. So you have to value how much the machine is worth. And you can imagine I deal with a lot of different aged machines. If a machine comes in and it's still under warranty, you don't want me to take it apart. You want to take it back to the warranty manufacturer. Because all I can do is make things worse. Whereas it's their responsibility. If it's out of warranty, then you're and you can't use the device, then you're looking for solutions. If I can't fix it, I normally have a nominal fee, like $50 to look at it. But if I can fix it, then there's at least going to be about $100 of labor that's associated with it, and then a part cost on top of it, whatever the part would cost.
Yeah, but what's your fun factor discount? Come on.
What do you mean, my fun factor? Oh, enjoying myself.
The fun
my
you're
learning
having
experience
here.
Discount. You know me too well, Bill. You know, people that hire me to do work for them, I talk too much. I'll go for an hour appointment and end up there for 45 minutes because we'll be just having a great time talking and sharing information, just like we do here. And I always tell my customers I don't charge for conversation or learning experiences. So if I had to learn how to fix whatever it is while I was there, I won't charge you for that time. If I know how to do it, you're getting charged by the time. But if I'm sitting there in front of your computer, I'm like, I've never done this before. Let me do some research. And I'm sitting there for an hour learning how to resolve their problem. I don't charge people for that time. Also, I don't charge for conversation. So if I come into your house and we're just having a grand old time telling stories, well, then I made the decision I had time to have stories with you. You don't need to pay for that.
I have to say goodbye.
Oh, goodbye, Mom. Thanks for being Bye. With us. I hope nice you find your iPad.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
I have some files to go through yet. I've lost something else that your dad's looking for. Oh, well. All right. See ya. Bye.
See ya. Bye. So what else we got going on?
Recommendations. Come on.
Okay, well, we can do that, but I have got another topic first that I thought had to be shared, and it's getting too late. It's been around for 2 weeks now. It's been around since the end of May, May 28th, but I don't know if you saw this or not. Sandwell, this is a place in Britain, discovered Bitcoin miners stealing electricity, which is probably the new mafia thing that's going on. Instead of looting trucks, they're Bitcoin mining and hooking them up illegally to the power grid so they don't have to pay for the electricity. The funny part of this story is the police showed up after profiling the power use and assuming they were going to bust a cannabis ring.
There's seven of us.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
The police showed up assuming that they were going to bust a grow-op because they were using so much electricity and generating so much heat, and were surprised to find a wall of servers burning through Bitcoins. It's the new grow-op.
Bitcoin.
It's harvesting Bitcoins on stolen electricity.
Well, at least you don't damage the walls with humidity.
That's true, but they would catch fire with heat.
Yes, that's true. Did you see, I sent you a link about Bitcoin for Dummies. It was, you know, it's a pretty good read or listen. It was a basic explanation of how Bitcoin works.
I think I did see that. I'm not remembering at the moment, but I do remember something like that.
Yeah. Anyway,
yeah, if you've got that link handy, stick it in the chat here because others might be interested in it.
I'll look at that. Look for it right now.
But it's kind of a fun article to read from that perspective. They fooled the police. I just don't think they were hoping that they would appear as a grow-op.
But they were still doing something wrong, a crime?
Yeah, they were stealing electricity from the electric grid.
Okay, so
but they
got charged with something anyways.
Oh, yeah. No, they got charged with theft of electricity, an illegal installation.
But, and it probably was worth it instead of...
I don't know what they, but what's funny is just that they showed up thinking that they were going to bust these marijuana growers and they found this Bitcoin operation. They used all the telltale signs to indicate a marijuana farm. And when they show up, it's a Bitcoin mining operation. Anyway, the link is there if you guys are interested in reading it. And again, I'll put it on the blog post for today's meeting.
I always wonder whether they would have been making money if they'd paid for the electricity.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is they probably weren't. They probably wouldn't. That's why these bit mining operations keep moving around the globe.
Looking for free electricity.
Looking for the cheapest electricity.
But along the same line with the drug companies, you know, why don't they just make a grow up and do it almost legally? They're still going to make the money? I don't know.
Well, is it legal in Britain right now? I don't know if it's legal in Britain or not.
No.
This is the BBC. Oh, did somebody have something to chime in? Was that you, Sid?
Yeah, no, it's not legal in England.
No. So they had good reason to be profiling power usage. And they've got helicopters that fly over looking for heat patterns. They've got imagery so that they can see strange heat usage or emittance, I guess would be the correct term. Heat emittance.
No snow on your roof.
That's right.
Off.
That's how they find them in Alaska. There's no snow on the roof.
So they can do the same thing when they're looking for bit miners or know, hackers or whatever.
Apparently so, yeah.
I keep getting ads on Facebook for high efficiency LED lights with the spectrum for growing plants.
Welcome to 99bitcoins.com.
That's the Bitcoin lecture that Bill just brought up.
I don't know why is it playing.
I clicked on it. Sorry, that was me.
Oh, I see.
Cheryl's adding color to the background.
Okay, this guy has, it's a YouTube series, and the first one is explaining what Bitcoin is. The next one is Bitcoin mining. I don't know how many he has, but it's a fairly straightforward, simple explanation of Bitcoin. You know, if you're interested in
welcome
in,
to
at all, and just want a little bit more
information, I'm Nate Martin, and I'll be your guide to this video series, Bitcoin Whiteboard Tuesday.
What's the name of it again?
We're going to cover a lot of topics, such as Bitcoin.
What is Bitcoin? Bitcoin Explained Simply for Dummies.
Today, we're going to start from the channel 99 and answer the third most searched term on Google today.
If you click on the chat room, James,
if you're worried,
you'll see a link to it. And what I do is when people put the things in the chat, I open up it in another tab, and then I can go back and see it later.
Be able to understand.
So if you're using the new format of this course, Meet down at the bottom, there's one that's like a boxy
90% of the population.
So you can't see it on my screen, but there's a box, like a pop-out dialog box graphic icon. It's the second from the right.
Bitcoin, I want to take a
moment. It says chat with everyone when you hover over it. You click on that, and you'll see a list of these links that we've been sharing. And Bill just shared this link.
You give me money in exchange.
And Cheryl was describing her process of just going through and opening every one of these. Because when we leave the chat, this list disappears.
Value has taken many.
So if you want to go back to this later today, you'll want to have already opened this up
salt,
and saved it.
Wheat, shells,
and it's now called in-call messages.
Used as a medium of exchange.
Yes, however, in-call messages. And I put in there, it's called a Shark IQ robot. You asked about the model name on the new vacuum cleaner. It's not a ninja. Bill said something about Shark Ninja, but that's his cooking grill. So it's a Shark IQ robot.
Actually, isn't it made by Ninja?
Let me explain.
Seems like I looked this up
people
last
found
time.
It too cumbersome to walk around the world carrying bars of gold or other forms
I think
of money.
Maybe it is.
So paper money was invented.
I just went and looked on the box, so there's no word
a
ninja.
Or government.
I think their company, though, calls it a shark ninja. I'm bringing it up right now.
Return,
shark ninja. They're two different brands that have been merged together.
To $1,000. Not only were these pieces of paper much easier to carry, but you could spend $1 on a cup of coffee and cut your gold bar into 1,000 pieces.
I suspect what it was, and I'm
back.
You guys
you
aren't
simply
listening
took
$1,000
in bills.
Let me turn that off. I suspect it was two different companies that merged.
Oh, yeah. Well, we
Life
had a ninja.
At Shark Ninja.
So does that mean I could combine the ninja grill with the ninja robot and have it deliver my hot dogs to the living room?
Only if it's got a webcam, so we can watch you grill in the living room as it vacuums.
Yeah.
Well, it can grill and vacuum at the same time.
That's right.
What a deal.
I'm looking at Amazon now, the array of Shark robot vacuums, and the RV101AE is the one with the receptacle on the wall. And then they've got the RV2001WD, which doesn't have a receptacle, but it has a vac mop with sonic mopping. That's the difference. So I don't know. And the RV101AE costs around $433.
Well, that sounds reasonable.
Is that what yours cost, Bill? Was around $430?
We bought ours at Costco in Canadian funds, and I think it was, what was it?
It was about $400. It was on a big sale or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's $100 off, so that would kind of make it U.S. Yeah. So, yeah, it was about $400.
Okay.
They have one on special at Costco on Vancouver Island right now, but that looks to be one of these, but I'll have to go and check the numbers. It was just there yesterday.
The automatic cleaning.
Yeah,
it had the cleaning station, you know, where you...
Otherwise, they have a charging station that it homes at.
That's the cleaning station. It's also a charging station.
That is the cleaning station.
So it's,
yeah, but all these others.
Oh, without the cleaning. Yeah, that's all that is a charging station then. It has a base to return to get powered.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Okay, I got one more quick win. Actually, I got a bunch of quick ones, but I got one more that I thought you guys would find interesting and easy. I don't know if you saw this, but they just done a autonomous truck delivery. Save 10 hours not allowing the person to drive. There's a person in the driver's seat. This is a company called Too Simple. They're actually based out of Arizona and Texas, I think. And I don't know if you can see the map on it. That blue line is what it traversed from Texas to Tucson. And this is autonomous vehicles. This is the next move of autonomous vehicles. We'll see. You may not be still successfully using a self-driving car, but you will be driving next to trucks that are driving themselves these distances. And this article goes into great detail of how much benefit they're deriving from this. It talks about how long-time truck drivers, what's that terminology?
Long haul.
Thank you.
Long haul.
Long haul truck drivers are subject to regulations that restrict how many hours they're allowed to drive and how many hours they need to rest between driving. And so just having an automated truck easily cut down 10 hours because if a journey is going to take more than 11 hours, a long-haul truck driver has to take a 10-hour break. And so the product that they brought, they were bringing watermelons, and there was noticeable better quality watermelons simply because they could be distributed in the food network that they were delivered to a day early because it showed up 10 hours early. So this company, Too Simple, is talking about this being a norm by 2024, safely operating without safety drivers, for trucks to operate without a safety driver on board by the end of 2024. That's their goal. Pretty cool stuff. I'll put a link in today's blog post, which probably will be out later this week, given the kind of time it takes me to build that. And I'll also stick it in our link here if you'd like to read it right now. But you can always refer back to it on sccclub.org. I also, once again, will encourage you to go to SCC Club or to our YouTube channel, which you can get to easily with youtube.sccclub.org, and hit the subscribe button so that we can get more subscribers. Here comes Maggie again. So we can get more subscribers so I can get closer to the 100 subscribers so that I can have a pretty YouTube name for our club. There's the link. So if you clicked on that link, it'll take you right to our YouTube channel. Dun, da, da, dun. And I'm the owner of the channel, but if I wasn't, right up here, there would be a subscribe button, and you just hit that. In fact, what was the one we were just at? We were at the Bitcoin. I'm going to do that right now, because I'd like to know when they put out a new Bitcoin video.
Welcome to 99bitcoins.com. I'm Nate Martin, and I'll be your guide to this video series.
And you see how they've got a red subscribe button right there?
We're going to cover a lot of topics, such as Bitcoin mining, Bitcoin wallets,
how to trade Bitcoin, and a lot more. Hit the subscribe button.
Today, we're going to start from scratch and answer the third most searched term on Google today.
I think I'm still at 33 subscribers.
If you're worried that we're going to get too technical and use a lot of...
Do you know if we're all on there? Have you checked to see if we're all there? Because I think I tried to do it.
I think the last couple have been just from our group, yes.
Yeah, okay.
As you can tell...
Just about those truck drivers, the long-haul truck drivers?
Yeah.
Tens of thousands of jobs.
Yes.
That's a lot of families to feed off of. And how is the revenue from those that trucking going to feed those kids? I don't know, myself.
Yeah, and actually they talk about positions in trucking becoming something more like stewards at the beginning and the end of the travel. Like maybe the trucks would be driven out city limits by a driver, or at least chaperoned by a driver, and then they get out and send the truck on its way. And then at some point before the city limits, maybe a truck driver greets the truck and is chaperoning it into the city.
They have drones that just drop the driver into the
pilot. There you go. What was that, Paul?
Like a shipping pilot.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. That's what came to mind when I was reading about it.
I think they have ocean-going ships now that do exactly that. The pilot takes them out. It goes autonomously across, and the pilot meets it and brings it into port. But there's nobody on the ship in the middle.
Well, if the goods get damaged, who commits suicide then?
Yeah.
Right. How can you have an accident if you don't have a captain getting drunk in the oil carrier?
Or having sex up in the pilot or in the wheelhouse.
Right.
BC Ferries.
Yeah, that was it, wasn't it? It's BC Ferries.
We lost our ferries.
My callback was the Exxon Valdez.
Yeah, there you go.
In the north, I think, is one we lost.
Or what about the Sudan? The canal where it got stuck there for days.
Yes, but in the Mediterranean, the captain that was trying to impress his girlfriend or something got too close with the cruise ship and grounded it and drowned.
That's right.
That's wild. That cruise ship, or not the cruise ship, the canal issue. There's been a number of great analytical YouTubes out there talking about how fragile our supply network, our supply chain is, that something like that could just bring us down. I mean, affect prices, affect availability, just because those gummed up the works. The best, in fact, I'll bring something next week to share. About our chip shortage right now. We are dealing with a silicon shortage, which is strange because they're producing just as many microchips as they ever did, and they're in the same demand that they've been. But because of COVID and a couple of other things that have happened, there's like this wave of backward. And so you have lately automotive companies that are not able to build their cars. Like I think that Ford F-150, the electric, I think that's been delayed and it's slow to be ordered because they've had shortages of chip supplies. And the chips are just your typical, I mean, they're like a $10 chip. And they're not even really sophisticated chips. They're just not here because these producers have become so dependent on these just-in-time inventory systems so that they are able to reduce costs down to the minimal amount to maximize profit. And a Toyota right now is being held up as an example of using just-in-time correctly, whereas the rest of these American companies that have thought that they were practicing this minimalizing of inventories and just-in-time inventory practices that originated in Japan, they weren't doing it with the kind of a quality that is required for it to be effective. And I watched a great video that was talking about why Toyota is still building cars and being very successful, whereas companies like Ford are waiting for chips to show up. But yeah, this problem is everywhere in our industry right now. There are game machines that you can't buy. You've probably heard grandkids talking about the PS5 or the Xbox Series X. These things are not easily available right now because of these chip shortages.
One of the major consequences I heard about from that Suez event is that there's a huge shortage of garden gnomes in England.
I'm glad we're keeping our priorities straight.
Maybe there's a job for you and I, Bill.
I thought they were
going to get into garden gnomes.
They're endemic in England?
Now, James, do you mean making them or imitating them as a rental business?
There you go. You can take it every which way.
You guys have secondary jobs. They can put like little netbooks out in the lawn, and you can zoom in as a garden gnome.
There you go.
That's it. We'll get them to be what are those things? Holograms.
Yeah. What I was going to say is they're forecasting these devices as not being available until 2022. And the chips are being made, the devices are in demand, but the chips are not in the right place to build the devices. And they're not catching up. There, everything is back. Consequently, back ordered. It's the only way I can think about it. Is people are putting in orders, they're getting produced, but they're so far behind that they're not coming out just time longer. And Toyota makes the point of understanding how just in time works, and part of that is identifying your critical components. And Toyota at the beginning of this had already stockpiled large amounts of chips because they understood that was the critical component in what they built. Ford sent people home. They had trucks on an assembly line, and they're just sitting there gathering dust because they can't continue without those chips. Toyota just went in their back room and got more chips because they're ready for it, because that's part of just-in-time inventory.
Well, I just want you to know that it's not my daughter's fault, because she's a crane operator in the port of Los Angeles, and she keeps unloading.
Yeah.
They're just not there.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're even there, but they're already so far backlogged that they're not catching up, and they don't think they're going to catch up until 2022, even though they're being produced at the same rate as before, even more so than before. And the demand hasn't changed. The products are still but it's this wave, like a compression wave in the system that they're having to live through right now. And unfortunately, the reason we feel it is because of these things that are critical components that these other companies didn't identify as critical from the beginning. All right. We got off topic. I'm off of topic. I'm out of topics. And we haven't hit any recommendations. So maybe we ought to take a moment for that before we get out of here. Anybody brought a recommendation to the table or to the Google Meet? Someone was asking for recommendations. They had to have brought something. Cheryl, you got nothing?
I don't know. What happened in the last week? What happened? I don't seem to have watched anything.
Well, I've got something. I got one movie that I can easily recommend that I would never have thought that I was going to enjoy.
It's not a zombie show, is it? Please, it's not another zombie.
All right, so I'll talk to you next week. No, I'm kidding. It's the new Cruella movie. The origin story of the villain of 101 Dalmatians.
Did you see it?
We did. We saw it. And I didn't care to see it. The kids really wanted to see it. I was surprised. I didn't know that they were going to care to see it. I have watched a number of these live action spin-off kind of movies from Disney, and I haven't been impressed with them. I haven't enjoyed them very much. The one that I had the most fun with was the Aladdin one. And it had nothing to do with what Disney did. It was my kids. They grew up with Aladdin. Apparently, I didn't know that. But they sung every song in the movie. So I think I would have had even more fun if we'd watched the original cartoon. But it was fun watching the live action because they knew all the lyrics. And it was just like our own personal show. These girls just belting out Aladdin tunes from this Disney flick. So I went into a very low expectation. Also, Sony watched the movie. You know, my partner in crime, the other tech in our business, and she told us she didn't like the movie. She didn't think it was very good. We get into this movie. It's an awesome movie. It is really well done. Special effects are great. The story is original. Probably the only thing that was a little weird is we were left sympathizing for the villain character because there was a bigger villain character, but at least you get to see where all the devices of that character come from. It was well acted. It had Emma Stone and Emma Thompson in it, and it was just a fabulous movie. We really enjoyed it. Laughed out loud a lot. It was fun. It was really good.
Did you watch this at home?
Yeah. You know, if you're looking for a legitimate source for this movie, it's available on Disney Plus Premium, which means you pay $30 to see it instead of going to the movie theater.
Okay, so Disney Plus we have a subscription to, but it's how much more for
this
the premium?
This is their model now. You can go to the movie theater and see it at movie theater prices, or you can watch it on your Disney Plus subscription if you pay for a premium, which is $30 for that movie.
$30 per month, $30 per show?
The way I understood it, and I'm happy to be corrected, for that movie. $30 to watch that movie.
Once.
Well, we definitely weren't going to pay $30 to see the movie, so I don't know how it falls out. But there are other places that do this kind of stuff. Amazon does this kind of stuff with Prime, where you basically rent a movie to watch, and you typically are given a period of time to watch it in. So it's something like 72 hours to watch what you've rented, and that period starts when you first start the movie. So you can
But could I pay for it to be shown at the same, doesn't have to be the same time or the same 72 hours, that my granddaughters can watch it in three different provinces?
I think that's a great question. I have no idea. That would be a great, I mean, if you guys find yourself in that situation, we want to know if it works that way, because that would be wild. If you could be,
well, I have two granddaughters, and I think they both would enjoy the movie, and one has a birthday coming up, and so I was looking at it to see, is there a way for me to show Cruella to her and her friends, or her cousin, you know, at the same time, and how much is it going to cost me?
I'll let you in on a secret. There is, called StreamYard.
Can you do a group watch in StreamYo?
No. But you can always say in group meet, we're starting it now.
There you go. Anyway, Scott, I have one. It's not really a recommendation because I haven't seen it yet, but I'm eagerly anticipating Dune.
Dune. Oh, Dune, yes.
It's in the theaters now, but it hasn't showed up as a legitimate movie in StreamYo.
Well, since none of us have seen it yet, I'm not going to put it on the list yet, but I'm with you. I'm eagerly awaiting it as well. Did you watch the original, which I never read the books. So when I saw the original movie that was made, I was lost and had to watch it a number of times throughout my life and get backstories from people that read the books to understand what was going on.
I, on the other hand, have read a lot of the books.
Good.
So I know the backstory on a lot of these characters.
I'm going to put Dune on our book recommendation list.
Book recommended, yes. But there's lots of them.
Do you have some specific titles that come in mind that you think somebody should read?
Start at the beginning.
Dune. Did you see the miniseries remake?
I don't know if I have. I should go look it up.
No, don't bother. I
was kind of going to say the same thing. I think the movie, the original movie, the miniseries has got some great special effects, and they play on the characters a little differently. But in the end, it's the movie is a beautiful movie. It's taken me years to understand what was going on, but the sets and the costume and the acting is just awesome in that movie. And okay. Sting's in it too, right?
If I remember right. I was going to say, he's one of the antagonists, a real bad guy.
Yeah.
Him and his father or brother, they are
the Harkonnens.
Excellent villains.
Hey, Sid, do you have any Dune titles for reading you would suggest?
I fell off somewhere while reading Dune Messiah eons ago because I just kind of lost the story.
I should look for them on audiobook. I don't think I will ever take the time to read those
books.
They're
on every audiobook source out there. The book itself has become a real part of our society.
And there's prequels going a thousand years to in the front of this thing as well.
Yeah.
And it goes forever. You could spend the rest of your life reading Dune type books, I'm sure.
Yeah.
It's like following Star Wars books.
I was going to say. Many books. Well, are all Dune books done by, I have forgotten his name, isn't it?
Herbert.
So are they all written by him, or are they franchised out like Star Wars books?
They're franchised out because he eventually died, didn't he?
Uh-huh.
When you read Star Wars books, you get into an author that you really enjoy, and those are the books that you follow. There are certain authors like Michael Stakepool or Timothy Zahn, who just have these amazing Star Wars stories, and you look for those authors when you're reading Star Wars books. But I didn't realize that Dune had turned into a franchise like that, where there was more than the original author. Well, do we have any other recommendations? Anything else that's... Recommendations can be shows, movies, apps, books, podcasts, websites, audiobooks. anything that you think that we might find interesting. I've got an app recommendation if you guys are interested. I've used it for years and had to use it the other day and thought it was very helpful in creating a report for my Windows computer. It's called BellArc Advisor. You may have heard of it in the past. I'll put the link in our meet notes here. What are we calling them? In-call notes, is that right? In-call messages?
In-call messages.
I'll add this to in-call messages. The BellArc Advisor does an inventory of your computer. I wonder if I've still got an inventory sitting on my screen. I think I threw it away. But it creates, you install it, and then you run it, and what it creates and opens is a web page that details the characteristics of your computer, from the hardware to the software. And one of the reason I was using it in that moment was I was taking an older computer that had originated as a Windows 7 computer, and I was going to upgrade it to Windows 10, but the Windows 7 product code was not on the sticker anymore. It had worn out, and I did not want to lose the ability to put Windows 7 back on it. But to do that, I need the product code, and the BellArc Advisor lists your software license codes. So if you ever felt like there was stuff like that that you didn't want to lose about your computer, you could run this and archive that page. The BellArc, BellArc Advisor. And it is a Windows program, so if you have Macintosh, it's not. I don't think they've got a version for Macintosh.
Oh.
Sorry, Jim.
I was trying to write it down.
I'm looking on the website right now, but I think it's only for Windows. BellArc Advisor. Yeah, all different versions of Windows. Oh, hey, their commercial product runs on the Macintosh. So the one I'm using is a free one, but I bet what they're saying is you can buy a version for the Macintosh. But it's a great...
Does a Macintosh have a little M on their forehead, you see?
That's right.
They know to pick on us. Ask for money.
Do you remember, I mean, being a Mac person, iPhone users, do you remember that we went through a few years ago, a controversy? Because if you were shopping for things on something like Amazon using your Apple-built device, you would be presented with more expensive products than if you were using a different device. They were using that tracking data to recognize you as an Apple customer, which qualified you as a higher-ticket customer. And the algorithm would change the search results in a shop like eBay or Amazon to present to you more expensive products first. Well,
we need something like a VPN so we can disguise ourselves.
Well, and this was actually that wouldn't work because it actually profiled the hardware you were on. So it didn't matter whether it came through a VPN or not. It's like, oh, this is the Safari browser's plug-in for our app. I mean, Amazon, for example, you use Amazon on your iPhone. Amazon knows everything about what its app is doing for you, including being on an iPhone. And it doesn't matter if you connect through the cell network or your Wi-Fi or a VPN. It's still keeping track of you as an iPhone customer using Amazon.
Yeah. I know the VPN won't work, but we needed something else, you know, like I don't know what it would be, some other kind of system that would disguise us.
That's right, or mimic a different technology. And there is some of that stuff out there. For this problem specifically, I couldn't say, but I've read papers on browsers that are doing things now that are like reporting back different analytics than are actually available. So they're intentionally reporting they're a different browser, they're on a different memory footprint, they're using a different font than you actually are, because what they're reporting is just being used to fingerprint you as somebody to identify and market to.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting place we are at right now in this respect, because we've got like the Chrome, we've got Google trying to change this whole thing with cookies. They're calling it advertising. They're calling it privacy. They're trying to provide more privacy for you. And what they're doing is they're stripping all that tracking out. And then they're using a system called Flock. And this Flock system is a way of identifying you and then putting you in what they call a list of cohorts, cohorts, and your cohort group is something like middle-aged white men instead of Scott Stimson. Right? Well, they would never have my name directly, but instead of my browser in San Carlos in my phone, I'm put into a group of middle-aged white men that surf the internet regularly. And so then anything that that group finds useful is where they would shoot the advertising down. So they're not advertising directly to me, my phone, my browser. They're advertising to my cohort group. Now, this thing is back and forth. We actually should dedicate some time in one of our meetings to talking about Flock, because it's really controversial. Google is trying to do something that will create more privacy for you as an individual. At the same time, they're most definitely creating an advertising scheme that only they can take advantage of. So they're controlling the advertising market that's there, right? While in the guise of giving you more privacy. And it is. It's definitely their scheme for giving you more personal privacy definitely will work. They pull away from directly connected to out to a group of similars. But when they do that, what you're really being you're being advertised in general again. Kind of like TV advertisements used to be, right? Maybe the demographic isn't as granular as, you know, balding blonde guys that are overweight, but it is still this demographic that's more granular than just everybody watching Fox Channel. They have cut out the business of advertising to only themselves. If other people get on board with this idea, only Google would be able to be advertising to us using this more privacy for us, our more personal privacy, this system called Flock. And consequently, all the browser developers that use the Chromium engine have elected not to bring Flock into their system. So their browsers, Chrome is the only browser right now that uses this. Apple has done a similar thing recently. And you guys with iPhones and iPads have probably witnessed it, where the latest software update is asking if you want to be tracked. And most people don't want to be tracked, and so they say no. And there's this huge amount of data, advertising data, analytical data, that is now not available to your application. And so advertisers can't take advantage of that. And so they have to advertise to you in general instead of you specifically, except for Apple. Apple can market directly to Jim Hines or Paul Gregory, because you've got the Apple device in your hand, and they've cut out all the other advertisers. They're the only ones that are able to advertise directly. There's a lot in this topic. I'm going to shut it off there because we're way over the time we like to run these meetings. We should bring this up again because it's fascinating. I think that you find yourself as a consumer on both sides of this issue. I personally find myself thinking, I grew up with TV advertising, and then nobody knew I was an 8-year-old boy sitting in front of late night TV watching advertising for booze or for pickup lines or whatever it was that was on TV that was intended for adults. And I feel like I'm just fine. I don't think there's much need for targeted advertising at all. I don't care. And I think that all of this is kind of the wrong way for us to develop technology. We've watched technology get bastardized for advertising. That's where all these app developers, somebody asked me the other day, why don't you make an app? Maybe you can make money building an app. I'm like, nobody's making money off of building apps. Everybody makes their money off of building an app and then selling the analytics to an advertiser. That's the business model. You used to build an app and sell it to Microsoft. You'd build a whole software company around a platform in hopes that Microsoft or Apple would buy it from you. That's how you would make money. Now everybody builds apps in hopes that they'll be popular and people will love them so that they can take your analytics and sell them to an advertiser. And that's where we're at in 2021. This has been the San Carlos Computer Club. I'm Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions. Don't forget that I can help you remotely if you need it. I can burrow into your computer and try and sort out what problem you're having. If you need something like that, you can email me remote@internationalcs.net, or you can find me all over the internet. You can go to the Computer Club, sccclub.org. Go there just to find the blog posts from all our meetings. All these things we talk about, these links, they'll show up there. I make an episode artwork for each one of our meetings, which is pretty cool. I turn it into a jigsaw puzzle, which is pretty cool. If you want to find any of that stuff, I put the recommendations up there too. So if you're looking for a list of movies, a list of TV shows, a list of books, they're all on that website, sccclub.org.
The intro on the, their, what is it, your YouTube? Or where's the intro?
On the podcast. That's right. If you
want intro to the podcast is worth the journey in itself.
You can't.
Little plug.
Thank you, Bill. You can't hear the intro from the YouTube video. You have to listen to the podcast.
The podcast. Well, I listen to the intro. I don't listen to the podcast.
But
well,
you go were there here every for week the podcast.
To hear the intro.
Actually,
what's that?
Actually, you'd be surprised. You should listen to one of the podcasts sometimes because I try and do a valiant job of going through and cutting out all the dead air and all the ooms and ahs and the static and the distortion where we can't hear each other. And I try and leave all the interesting bits. Sometimes I get done. I've got like two. Sometimes we get done with this meeting and I've got well over 2 hours of audio. And sometimes I can cut it down to just below. Like maybe I'll have 2 hours and 30 minutes of audio and I can get it down to an hour and 40 minutes with all just the garbage that we, that just doesn't matter to it. Hopefully it's just interesting meat.
You're definitely a censor at heart.
That's it.
Tech on.
Hey, you guys, tech on till next Tuesday.
Tech on. Thanks a lot, Scott.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
I already can't wait for the next meeting. Send me your topics beforehand so I'm ready.
Just a heads up that in 2 days, I got an email from the Cinemax kind of place. Only, yes, in 2 days, they are opening theaters in Alberta to show movies. They've already sold out all of the limited capacity for the first 3 shows.
All so, right. My wife won't let me go to a movie theater.
Yeah, we're not going on the 10th either. That's why I'm looking for another place for Cruella for the 21st.
I've told her a couple of times, like, I really missed a movie theater. I want to go to the movie. She's like, we're not going to the movie theater yet. There's just not enough vaccinated people around here. I don't care if it's open.
It sounds like you had a wonderful birthday party. I'm glad that happened for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was awesome. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, I'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, and that was it. That's not me. This is me. That was it. This is the San Carlos Computer Club. I am Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions. I am your wired technician. If you do have issues with your devices, servers, computers, routers out there in the real world and you're looking for well-experienced, good advice and help, I'm here for you. Give me a call. Send me an email. Do all those things that you can find me on the YouTube channel. You can find me at our website. Find me at our business website, internationals.com. Write me directly, Scott@internationals.com. I'll see what I can. Until next Tuesday at 10, everybody, tech on.